Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson.
Well, hello, Susan, and all our listeners out there. Now, where are you taking us today?
Actually, we touch on immigration activities in a couple of bigger towns in our listening area. And then we turn to a writing contest that involves students from several towns, as well as the Horeen Writing Contest for Youth, sponsored by the Story County Conservation Center. And we have a guest with us who will be with us, Matthew Goodman, who was at the city council meeting last night, and I'd like to introduce that because it was quite an eye-opening experience, I think, for those people who don't watch Channel 12 and don't follow the city government very, very closely. They're dealing with something that seems very probably a mundane to a lot of people. It was a resolution saying that the police should keep people safe, really in response to the pressure that has been put on by the federal government for cities to act as immigration agents. And there are a number of cities that object to this, police departments, particularly strongly here in Story County, that police can't do their job, number one, if they frighten people so that they won't talk to them if they do witness a crime, or if they're victims of crimes, that is counter to their job, and they don't have time to do more than what they're already doing. And so they, in order to do their job, they will not be arresting people for not having the right papers when they have a traffic ticket.
Well, this is obviously part of a national issue that was very visible in the news, and probably something that's in contention throughout the country, because the issue is, to what extent will local police, sheriff department, and police folks be involved in apprehending folks that the ICE people are looking for?
Yes, and there's another wrinkle on that that is addressed in the resolution, which incidentally has, I think, the same wording as one that was passed in Iowa City. And that is that the word sanctuary is become a lightning rod for attention from the federal government. So we very carefully did not imply that they're doing anything special. We just are supporting our police in doing their job.
So this resolution does not identify Ames as a sanctuary city, per
Absolutely
se.
Absolutely not, and it's actually dangerous to talk about it in that way. We specifically are not. We are specifically supporting our police. And but this did come up, was raised by the Ames Human Relations Commission, which gave a lengthy report last night to the council, and this was the last item. And so the first person who spoke about this was the head of the Ames Human Relations Commission, John Kloss. And he, from his perspective, I think, stressed a little bit more that we want to make people feel safe. Well, that's not in the wording. The wording is we want the police to do a good job. And so there was a little discussion about that. And then the city council members spoke, and then some of the citizens spoke. Because, of course, I had the liberty of editing and rearranging things, I arranged these so that I think they'll make some points in order. So the first one is from Gloria Betcher, who is a council person.
I'm afraid I'm a little skeptical about how many people in this community actually will know we passed this resolution. I know some people might be watching Channel 12 and some people out there might spread the word, but it seems to me that government resolutions are not typically the most effective way to educate and communicate with the community. So would passing this resolution make it easier for the police to have a tool that they can use to say to people, look, the city has actually acted on this? Would that help? Or is it really just we're passing a resolution, it makes us all feel good, and whoever's watching knows it happened?
Well, the next person who spoke was one of the people who had worked on getting this resolution brought to the City Council and represents a lot of citizens who might be watching tonight. This is Cheryl Benson.
My name is Cheryl Benson. I live at 707 Burnett in Ames. Thank you. So much of what I wanted to say about this resolution has already been said, which is good because then I won't take so much time tonight. But first of all, I want to identify that the resolution that we're talking about, its official title is Resolution Reaffirming the Public Safety Function of Law Enforcement. So again, it's a reaffirmation, as what was just stated, of what's already being done. So now I want to back up a little bit and address a couple of issues that are brought up. And first of all, Peter, you've mentioned more than once about welcoming, and I just want to say to you that Inclusive Ames, which is organic citizens group, we're just out there doing our thing to make Ames even more welcoming than it is. There is a group that's working on welcoming. It just doesn't require a resolution to come in front of the City Council. And there's also a group that's working on what it means to be safe. A broad topic, a lot of discussion around that. But back to this, this is a specific resolution that we're asking the Council. We came to the Commission. The Commission, thank you, has supported bringing it to Council because we think that the official recognition of what's already being done can be publicized, can be talked about through Inclusive Ames, through Channel 12, through the people that are here, that lets people know that this is our policy. This is what we're already doing. So that I wanted to say that. I also wanted to mention that this action that we're doing right now came out of a meeting that was held in November. As was mentioned earlier, there were over 300 people there. The people there put post-it notes about anything that they thought was actionable, and this was just one of those many things. So what we're bringing to you is the outpouring, if you will, or the outflow from that meeting of over 300 people. So I thought that was helpful to know that. And also, as this idea came to us as something that we might want to pursue as a possibility, we really did do our homework. We didn't just say, hey, this is a great idea, although we think it is. So we did meet with Judy Parks, our city attorney, to see, first of all, if it was legal or not the way it was written. We also met with Chuck Sykosh, our chief of police, and you've already heard from him. We met with Brian Phillips, the assistant city manager. We also met with Natasha Green, Nick Grossman, who are the multicultural liaison officers at the ISU Police Department, and we met with each of you, Mayor, and the council members, and we really, really appreciate the time that you took to meet with us because we got some valuable input and we got some thoughts, we got some additional ideas of what we can do beyond this. So thank you for your time. So what I'm asking is your support to pass this resolution in whatever official capacity that happens. I guess it's at another meeting. But in any case, it's the resolution reaffirming the public safety function of local law enforcement. And thank you so much for your time and your support so far.
Another of the people who had been part of a group that brought this before the Ames Human Relations Commission was Rick Exner. And his comments also helped to answer Gloria Vetcher's concerns about whether this makes any difference to anybody.
I'm Rick Exner. Live at 1014 Murray. I'm associated with Amos Immigration Group, and Amos, as you know, is involved in diverse areas of our life here in Ames. The Amos Immigration Group is an information network that has found itself responding to needs in Story County. One of these needs is renewing the confidence of immigrants that they are a valued part of our community. In this effort, Amos has worked with Inclusive Ames and the Ames Progressive Alliance to promote the resolution that the Ames Human Relations Council is presenting to the City Council this evening. There is fear in the immigrant community that has been made worse by what people are seeing in the news and by the bullying of children that surged after the election. At a meeting in St. Cecilia Church attended by about 85 adults, Story County Legal Aid and attorneys from Barton Law helped people do what families across the country are doing, establishing power of attorney for children in case their parents are taken away. In this climate, people have difficulty making fine distinctions about law enforcement. I know a woman who will not even go grocery shopping on the side of Nevada where the Story County Jail and Sheriff's Office are. But the undocumented community badly needs law enforcement. These people are among the most vulnerable in terms of wage theft, domestic abuse, trafficking, and other forms of exploitation. I told the meeting at St. Cecilia that I believe Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald and Chief of Police Charles Siosh are their allies, and I explained why. And I think I was heard. On the other hand, the uniforms of Immigration and Customs Enforcement also say police, and that is often how they announce themselves. But the prevalence of fear does not mean that there is no point in asking for trust. Rather, the message of trust needs to be conveyed again and again in different forms and different contexts. I told the meeting at St. Cecilia that people in Ames were working on the resolution before the council tonight. I read them the first therefore bullet, and I asked for a show of hands of those who thought the resolution would be helpful and those who thought it was useless. Everyone who responded thought this resolution would be helpful. No one indicated that it would be useless. I believe that provides our answer should the same question arise among us here.
So I think those are pretty good answers to Gloria Boettcher's concerns. But the person who spoke most forcefully and effectively was the chief of police, Siosh. And I have a little clip from his discussion with Councilman Tim Garten. So could we hear that?
Do you see any negatives to the resolution? Can I frame it that way?
I don't see anything that limits our ability. And again, I think the answer to that question is probably more affected by how we talk about this, how we behave. Questions about are we an inclusive community? Are we committed to a collective sense of safety here? Are we willing to work with people in the community to accomplish that? And so the heavy lifting on that gets done every day in our neighborhoods, in our shopping locations with people we know and may not know. And I think it's that type of conversation and interaction that's critically important in determining whether this becomes a positive or negative in our community.
So I'll give you a hypothetical, and this is one of the things that I think is very compelling about this proposal. A woman is the victim of domestic abuse assault by her husband or boyfriend. And we take this very seriously. I know you take that very seriously. She was undocumented, and she was concerned that by contacting law enforcement, she might put herself or her children at risk. That might be a deterrent for her from calling law enforcement. Would you agree with me on that?
Certainly it can be.
And so if this was communicated broadly, that people similarly situated would feel the freedom to contact law enforcement, I think we're all better off by having the same level of law enforcement for those elements of our community than for everything else.
In fact, we've asked our Safe Neighborhoods team to try to reach out with some informal interaction with the community to say exactly that. Our concern is for your safety. Our concern is for your well-being. Our concern is not your immigration status. And in fact, we don't have any authority to investigate or prosecute someone's immigration status, and that's particularly true of victims. So we try to make sure we're communicating that and accessible.
Thank you. Chuck?
Chuck, can I just ask one other thing? One of the things that I have brought up when people have been talking to me about this is that I'm afraid I'm a little skeptical about how many people in this community actually will know we passed this resolution. I know some people might be watching Channel 12 and some people out there might spread the word, but it seems to me that government resolutions are not typically the most effective way to educate and communicate with the community. So would passing this resolution make it easier for the police to have a tool that they can use to say to people, look, the city has actually acted on this? Would that help? Or is it really just we're passing a resolution, it makes us all feel good, and whoever's watching knows it happened?
I think it's the conversation. I think it's the interaction that's important. Certainly if you pass this resolution, we will include it as one of the tools in our toolkit. The fact is, the points in this resolution are true either way. And so, to some extent, we have this in our, we have these principles in our toolkit. The Human Relations Commission and some of the members and some of the citizens who've come to that group and talked to us are saying that maybe you have a louder voice than you know as a council, and I think that's the backdrop for what they've brought to you tonight. So, I don't see where it hurts our operation to do this. And if you and the community stand behind this, it's one more way of.
Look, I just like to hear. I mean, we had a packed room tonight, and I think it's very encouraging for everybody here. This is already the policy of your police department.
Yeah.
Your people are on the front lines. They're doing a vigorous job of law enforcement and providing public safety already. So I think this makes some sense. I think there is a place for some symbolic gestures, but I commend your work and your police department for doing this already.
But I don't want to take too deep a dive on this, but we probably need four or five other languages. It's a translation of this material from sort of this official arena and all this legal environment that we operate in into something that people in our community can consume and understand and make meaningful in their lives. And so, again, I sort of maybe challenge the commission a little bit to help us translate this back into the community. If you choose to pass this tonight, it's what we do with it that's important. And
it's what we do with it that's important. We have someone else who can speak with a couple of hats, former City Councilman Matthew Goodman, who is also a member of some of the committees working on this. Now, which groups are you involved with that brought this resolution to the council?
Thank you, Susan. Primarily, I'm one of the two co-chairs. Carrie Katz and myself are co-chairs of the Ames Progressive Alliance, and we try to leverage community resources for progressive priorities. And so we look for partners in the community who want to achieve something, and then we try to bring our relationships and expertise to bear on those issues. The group we are working with in this case was the Inclusive Ames Group. They are a group that is composed of people who were in an event in November that APA put on, but they act independently, and they have a list of goals they had defined and have been trying to achieve since then, and APA helps when we're asked. And so we've been involved with them since probably January or February, the Save Communities team, to try to achieve this goal, this law enforcement purpose resolution.
So how did you feel about the meeting last night?
I thought the meeting was, as always at council, very interesting. The results, I think, were great. I think everyone spoke well. I think, Inclusive Ames and APA have been working on this for a long time. And I should also mention that Amos has been a big partner as well. Cheryl Benson has been the Inclusive Ames person on this, and Rachel Hansen, and then Rick Exner has been the Amos person on this. They've all done a lot. We've met with a lot of people. We've had a lot of conversations trying to be respectful and trying to learn and I think the biggest piece of last night was, while at the federal level these conversations are very sensationalized, I think at the local level this conversation has been a very reasonable conversation. And I think that's the most important part of local government. When you have relationships with people, you can think and have conversations and make changes that mean more and are better behaved, to be quite frank. So I thought the meeting overall was a very good meeting, and I think there's a lot of positive feelings on the council about this resolution.
I think it's very telling also to know that no one spoke against the resolution at the meeting. So no one came out and said, this is a bad idea.
No, the question was just, can we add anything that would make it more welcoming? And, of course, then you get into the legal issues and what the message you want to have for local consumption, and but will not attract the attention of national law enforcement, right?
Sure. Well, and I think, again, I say sensationalize at the federal level because I guess I could even say at the state level to some extent. But because the truth is, local law enforcement's job is to protect the people who live in that community. And the only way they can do that and empower them to have safe lives is to create relationships with those people. And the only way you create relationships with people is you have those people trust that you are not going to make their life worse. And well, that's it.
This plays out already in Des Moines, where we have a string of homicides, several of which are related to running gang fights And then we have the police department in Des Moines saying that certain folks are not willing to cooperate in the solution of those crimes. And so you have there a community afraid to speak out. So that's being acted out in Des Moines in another way, in another venue. And I think that's probably a cautionary tale for us to look at.
The other part of that is that at the meeting last night, we had a member of the community, Liz Mendez, who speaks very frankly about being one of the people who would be affected by this. And let's close this segment with her words.
Liz Mendez, 809 on Wheeler in Ames. I come to you as a resident of Ames. As you can see, I'm not white. So when I hear discussions of diversity and inclusion, I think about, what about the people of color? What about the kids of color? When you look around, this room is almost all white. Am I safe? Am I welcomed? If you go into a room and there's everyone is black or brown, are you feeling safe? Why or why not? These are thoughts to think about as you question on your checklist. Am I diverse? Are we diverse? Are we inclusive? It's not only about words. It's how you approach and you build your policies around that. I say that because my children, after the election, I will not say his name, my daughters asked me, are we safe? Do we have to go home? Where is home? You were born here. Where is home? But somehow that narrative has been ironed in their mind, in their environment. Even though at home we talk about you're mixed, you're strong and confident young women. You are learning to be adults who are inclusive and safe. What does that all mean? I wanted to make a comment on that, so thank you. It humbles me to know that you're conversing about diversity and inclusion and really questioning your fear on this and asking, what can we do to improve the scorecard? Your scorecard is my life. Your scorecard is how I feel safe and who I represent in my community. Secondly, a huge way to understand the resolution is to know that even though you approve it, you sleep well at night, most likely, not because of the resolution, but of your privilege and your power. Those of us who are impacted will sleep a little better, but not all the way better. Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we've just heard a recap of the discussion of last evening's meeting between members of the Ames City Council and representatives of various citizens groups. Former City Council member Matthew Goodman was on hand to help us understand what happened last night. Others who spoke were Council members Tim Garten, Gloria Betcher, Chief of Police Chuck Sykosh, Rick Exner, Cheryl Benson, and Liz Mendez.
Ames is not the only town in our listening area that's trying to make those in their community feel safe and welcome. After a little break with Latin music, we will talk with Suemi Caes Sosa Rios, who works for the All Cultures Equal Center in Webster City. And I'd like to just make a comment about the relationship between the towns, because Suemi and her husband came down to one of the meetings of Inclusive Ames, and they're interested in what we're doing. That's a model for their somewhat different community up in Webster City. So let's have some Latin music.
Salsa mexicana, ay que ritmo. Esa es la primo. Bailar
Hello, Sue Amy?
Hello.
Oh, good to hear from you this morning. We have been talking about what happened at the Ames City Council last night, and we were interested in returning to Webster City because I know you have more obvious problems on the ground there, or do you? Have you had any arrests, any people physically threatened there?
No, not that I'm aware of.
There is a, I think you have a, I had the impression you had a very large immigrant population starting with the Lao people decades ago, and now that a lot of your local businesses are either run by or have a large workforce or owned by Latinos. Is that right?
Correct. Just on our second main street, we have over 400 people from other countries work or run or own the businesses. And we're actually getting a new shoe store from one of the a couple of immigrants.
So really, after the big loss of industries in Webster City, your main street would be pretty much full of empty storefronts if it weren't for the immigrants. Isn't that the situation? Is that
correct? Yep.
So you would expect that there would be a lot of support in Webster City. Is there quite a bit of support?
Overall, I think so. You have a couple people or a group of people who are not as supportive, but I feel that overall, you know, the schools, extension councils, other churches, nonprofits are pretty supportive of immigrants.
Now, I was curious to see what percentage of your population is Latino. And I looked at the figures online that I could find from the 2010 census and compared that with Ames. And I thought it was interesting how little numerical difference there is. Ames has 3% Latino population, and Webster City has just a little under 8%. So it's not a huge percentage. And some towns have as many as 30%. So a small active population can make a huge difference.
Yes.
And you have something that we've talked about here on KHOI up in Webster City, the All Cultures Equal Center. And so this would be an active, positive force. Could you describe a little bit about their work?
Yeah, we renamed this year, we renamed it to ACE Community Center. We wanted to go more for the community center approach for everyone, not just, you know, not just for immigrants, for everyone that lives here and is from here as well. We do a lot of help with, like, the English classes, Spanish classes. We put together meetings or conversations with, like, you know, if the city wants to talk to the immigrant populations, the Laotians and the Hispanics, and they want to translate it. We do that. We work with hospitals, translate their forms, or they'll call us up, you know, or reference people to us. We work with the police where they'll send out if someone needs the community, you know, and they don't know they have to have, we had like this family from Puerto Rico, and they didn't know they had to have car seats for kids under a certain age. So they send them to us, so we would explain it to them, and we do a lot of immigration paperwork, the basics, and we also have a lawyer who takes on the most intricate cases. And we put programs for the kids for both, you know, for people who speak Spanish, Laotian, or in English.
Now, you have courses from the community college. Are those the ESL courses or something else?
No, those are the ESL courses. We're trying to get the GED back to ACE, but we haven't been successful there yet.
Is there anything from Extension?
Nope, not currently. I am working with Extension right now in becoming a facilitator for the Juntos program, which helps kids in middle school and their parents, Hispanic kids, and their parents to learn about college and the importance of that. And I plan on bringing that to ACE in this fall, but not currently.
And what did you say the name of that program was?
Juntos.
Yes. What does it mean?
It means together.
Together.
And that's a program through Iowa State.
Well, you have been a guest on KHOI before. As a matter of fact, once with Rick Exner, when you were on the Day Without Immigrants March in Des Moines, at that time you were employed by a bank. That was why you had come to Webster City. And I believe you are now working full-time with ACE. Could you comment on why you decided to make that change?
Yeah, I've always, you know, just like a lot of people, I felt I need to give back and to do something for other people. And so I decided that I would live my life on doing meaningful stuff instead of just working for the money. So that's why.
And do you feel that's, do you feel rewarding, that it's rewarding?
Yes, but it is not. It is not like the picture on TV. It is not always happy, and it's a lot of work. It's rewarding, definitely, and fulfilling, but it's definitely, you know, hard sometimes.
Well, you're dealing with the problems.
Right. Well, in IT, that's all I dealt with, problems.
You know? Those are different kind of problems in IT.
Yes. These are definitely a different level.
It's a different level, yes. The problems in IT don't have faces.
Yeah, because they just call you, hey, my computer's not working. but this definitely touches people's life.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Is there anything else from Webster City that you'd like us to know about?
Well, I think I mentioned it to you that we are starting a radio show in Spanish Saturdays.
Yes, yes.
For 1 hour, and if it goes well, they plan on expanding that. So that's really exciting, and we're getting a lot of support for that, even from Fort Dodge or other locations that are not even Webster City. So
yes,
I'm really excited.
Just in case anybody missed that, there is a Latin. But what do you call this? The
it's called the Latino La Hora Latina.
So the in English, that's the Latino Hour.
Yes.
And that's the local radio station in Webster City. And it's you want to give them the call letters, and we'll put those on our website. We don't usually promote other radio stations, but this is a very special case, and maybe we can have one on KHOI. So what's the program, the station?
It's 92.9.
Okay. So, well, thank you so much for being with us, Suemi. I think we're going to have a bridge with some different kind of music to get into our next guest. So thanks so much. This is KHOI Community Radio, where your host for today, Paul Wearson, and I have been exploring how two cities, Ames and Webster City in central Iowa, have responded to increased concerns of their immigrant populations. A newspaper story sparked my interest in Ruth Harreen's book, who was inspired to organize the Bill Hareen Writing Contest for Youth, sponsored by the Story County Conservation Center. We have her on the phone to tell us about it. And just before we introduce you, I want to mention that that music you just heard was played on the same program that your father, Bill Hareen, was on to talk about Eagles with Pat Schlarbaum. So that music seems to me to be a great introduction to you and to him. Ruth is with us. Hello, Ruth.
Well, good morning. It's nice to be here.
And I believe that your father is really pretty well known, probably to a lot of our listeners. Would you like to tell a little bit about him, though?
Okay. Yeah, well, Dad was really an avid outdoor writer and journalist in Story County and beyond. He was very devoted to educating the public and especially young people about the importance of learning about the outdoors and conservation and the environment. And as you mentioned, he loved eagles. So his time with Pat Schlarbaum down at the Iowa State Fair talking about eagles and traveling around the state was just really a joy for him. He really loved working with Pat and telling other people about these wonderful birds and the outdoors. So he also was a photographer, and I think he did a little bit of everything in the outdoors.
Ruth, Paul Wearson here. I'm co-hosting with Susan today, and I remember reading avidly the columns and material written by your father, and he really was an advocate way back when that sort of advocacy was not that so much to the forefront as it is today. I regard him as sort of a pioneer because he was being published at a time when there really wasn't the level of awareness there is today. So Bill Hareen, that name really resonates with me. And I think he was a photographer also. Is that right?
Yes. And right now with the Story County Annual Photo Contest, they are awarding a Bill Hareen Best of Show award each year. So his photography, his love of just capturing the outdoors in photos took him all over. And he'd be really thrilled to know that that's still recognized today. And, you know, you're right about him being a pioneer. I think he was one of the first photojournalists. He appeared 14 years on Channel 8, which was then known as KRNT. Now it's KCCI. And he had a segment called Outdoors with Bill Hareen. He had one of the first outdoor talk programs at WOI Radio. And, you know, he kept the handle Outdoor Talk for all of his career. So we still use that, Bill Hareen Outdoor Talk.
Well, I wish he'd been with me 2 weeks ago because something happened to me that's never happened before, and I doubt will ever happen again. I was driving back to Story City from Stratford. I was on E18, and as I was driving east, there was an eagle, a fully mature male eagle, the white hair, you know, the white head, the whole thing, feasting on roadkill. I had never, ever seen an eagle do that. And here we were in the middle of cultivated ground, you know, squares of cultivated ground for as far as the eye could see. Here was this eagle feasting on roadkill right there on E18. Not near a stream, not near a wooded area. And I wish Bill had been with me. He could have snapped a picture of something that I think is very rare. That was just an amazing experience, and it just happened 2 weeks ago.
Well, he would have loved that, Paul. And, in fact, we have had eagles in our farm field out here. We're in the middle of Milford Township in Story County, and there have been eagles scavenging on kill out here. So it's wonderful. It's surprising to see them in places that we're not used to seeing them.
Well, thank you for verifying my story. I just regarded that as very unusual. And, you know, I think one thing you could talk about a little bit is his association with Pat Schlarbaum. Pat has been recently retired from DNR and is an advocate for peregrine falcons and all the predatory birds of the air. And he had a great show yesterday on public radio. And they have had a long association. Is that right?
Yes. Pat, especially when Dad was no longer able to travel himself, Pat would come and get Dad and take him to view and photograph the ospreys down at the state capitol and around the countryside. They were just a really great team. And again, like I mentioned, Pat always took Dad down to the Iowa State Fair, and we have these wonderful photos and where Dad's telling people about the eagles. And in fact, at his memorial service in 2015, the eagle from, you know, the SOAR, where they educate others, and they have, well, the eagle named Thor came to Dad's memorial service as a tribute to Dad. And Pat also spoke at that service, and it was a wonderful partnership between the two, because they had such a love of the bird and the outdoors. In fact, Pat took Dad to the Washington, D.C. Capitol, where they fly in veterans of the wars, and that was just awesome to have Pat go as Dad's companion to view all the memorials at, in Washington, D.C. So, yeah.
Father was a veteran of World War II, is that right?
Yes, yes. He was in the Navy, and that's actually where he started writing and taking photographs. He was a gunnery instructor. He did a lot of flying. So many things in his early life led him to end up as an outdoor person with writing and photography. And his whole passion was really to inspire youth. And I think that's one of the reasons we decided to do the outdoor writing contest, because he often said, you know, his stories really captivated the audiences of all ages, but he really enjoyed working with the youth. And one of his often quoted statements are, "They've got to learn from us. Who else will teach them to love and respect the outdoors?" And so we wanted to encourage the youth, starting here in Story County, and we had our first contest this year, and just wanted to encourage them to write about their outdoor experiences and inspire other people to get outdoors and learn about conservation and the environment. So that's sort of where it began.
Well, this contest is current. And there will be a resolution to this where they select the top winner?
Well, we have done that.
Oh, you've done that. Okay.
Yes. We had, on May 8th, we awarded the prizes to the top three winners. And we will be doing the contest again. We had 17 entries. And we're very happy that they came from all around, Ames High and Ballard, Gilbert, Huxley, Roland Story, Nevada. And it was really good to receive stories from the high school students in many of these schools.
Well, that means that this sort of thing is being talked about and emphasized in curriculums in the schools, or you would not have that motive to join the contest and make sure that faculty members know that this is an opportunity for them and to guide them and encourage them to participate. So this is a totally different environment than the one I grew up in the 50s, where we really took things for granted. There wasn't that much activism about conservation. I remember eagles were very rare. In fact, deer were rare, if you could believe that. I remember we'd have contests on the way to Minnesota with my brothers about how many points you could score for seeing a deer. And let me tell you, they were rare. And now, they're everywhere.
Yes, they are.
I just think that's one thing that, I've already noticed the proliferation of wildlife, and I realized that the book, A Silent Spring,
yes,
and all of these things that began back in the late 50s or early 60s founded a movement in which people became aware of things that, for a while, only science was concerned about. So the question is, to what extent will regular people out there sign on to the idea of pursuing conservation in all its forms to make sure that these species that are threatened are protected, encouraged to reproduce? And I really like some of the things that have been done in Iowa with the peregrine falcons, moving them into rural areas where they are, urban areas where they can nest in skyscrapers. That's a novel idea. And I think that your father and Pat are people who have been at the forefront of being innovative about making places prepared and environment available for all of these wonderful species of wild animals here in Iowa. Just marvelous heritage, and you got to be very proud of your dad, Bill.
Oh, we are. He left us quite a legacy, and I think that's why we wanted to continue to partner with Story County Conservation, and we thought the writing contest would be a good way to continue to inspire youth to talk about it and get them involved. So he's got big shoes to fill.
Well, I really think I hope that's an annual event and lasts way beyond the years that we can predict, because basically we need to make this generation even more aware than our own that these things are important and that we need to preserve and protect all of these species that one time were so rare. I'll never forget seeing that eagle 2 weeks ago. It's a great memory. It really is. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Ruth. I believe you will be maybe coming back and talking about this contest again in the fall, right, when you are asking for submissions.
Yes, we will. We will contact the schools, the teachers, and it'll be where by March 1st, that would be 2018, entries will be due on March 1st of next year. So, but we will be promoting it again starting in the fall. And I might say that Bill has a Facebook page, and if people want to know more about him or see what we're doing, it's called Remembering W.E. Bill Horine. And I think if you just put Bill Horine up as a search in Facebook, you'll find him. And I have to say, we are still accepting donations to help us continue the contest and award prizes. We awarded $450. The first place winner got $250. Second place got $150. And the third place got $50. So, it's good incentive, plus a wonderful learning experience for the students.
Well, thank you. And we'll have your website, I should say Bill's website, on our website. So if people go to our website, khoifm.org, and this program will probably be up with a picture of Bill. You sent me a picture yesterday, a beautiful picture with his beard. So we hope that lots of people now know to go to that and will follow his tradition.
Well, thank you, Susan. Appreciate the opportunity to tell people what we're doing and to keep remembering the great outdoors that Bill Horine loved.
Thank you. This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson. We spoke with Matthew Goodman, Tim Garten, Gloria Betcher, the Chief of Police Chuck Sykosh, Rick Exner, Cheryl Benson, Liz Mendez, Suemi Caius Sosorios, and Ruth Harreen Book.
And Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Now that's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The music you heard was Los Tucanes de Tijuana by Salsa Mexicana.
And Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. Now, if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 292-2878. Or you can contact us through our website, khoifm.org. And that's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership. Do it today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
Yes, and I want to say a thank you for all those people who did just that, because we've exceeded our goal, and we are very happy and grateful to all of you. And I also wanted to add a song. The music that was played before the Bill Harreen segment is Voices of the Wind, and from a CD of the same name. And if you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. And if you want to have a really good time, you might seriously think about becoming a reporter. As you can probably tell, we are having a good time, and we are learning so much about where we live. Thanks for listening, and
see you again
on the radio.